VentureCast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why is it that Kansas didn't have any hits in the 80s, Jeff? Did they break up or get hit by a truck?
They had that song, Hold On. But what killed them, I think, was MTV. They made a video for Play the Game Tonight in 1984. But, uh-oh. I mean, that is a band of Chewbaccas. I mean, it is a band of, like, Kansas middle-aged Wookiees. And I think they made the video and everybody went, oh, my God, that's what Kansas looks like? And it was over. Like, the end.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
And then we continue on. Fellas!
Timmy.
We're here in the Midwest.
It was so hard. It was so hard to wait a week to pick up from part one.
More bean content is what the letters are saying, and we're listening. Who gets to go first? Ben Barton, I think it's you tonight. Pew!
Oh, is that right? I thought I went first last time. I'm happy to go first, though.
Go for it.
John Mellencamp, born.
Let's go.
October 7, 1951, in beautiful Seymour, Indiana. Seymour, Indiana is the rare Midwest town that's actually gotten bigger and more prosperous. So it was kind of a small backwater when he was a kid, and now there's a big manufacturing plant there, gotten bigger. When he's 18, he heads off to Vincennes, a two-year university, where he has significant drug and alcohol problems, which he manages to kick in college and never return to. Which actually, if you know what a depressive individual he is pretty amazing that he stopped drinking and stopped doing drugs. Travels to New York, trying to make it as a musician. He's played in bands in college, and so he's just kicking around in New York all through the early 70s. Jeff, he hooks up with Tony DeFries, or DeFries.
Ah.
What do you know about Tony DeFries?
Tony DeFries is the is David Bowie's consigliere for quite a long time.
For sure.
Time.
He's the guy who brought Bowie to the U.S. and got him signed to a gigantic, massive deal. Here's a list of the other people he worked with. Iggy Pop, Mick Ronson, Martha Hoople, Lou Reed, Luther Vandross, John Cougar. Is that an insane list of people?
One of those things is not like the other.
And dude, no, he burnt out with all of them. He went a couple of records with each one of them. The Cougar, the John Mellencamp story is a classic one. He comes in, he signs him, they record his first record. And who knows if this is true, but according to Mellencamp, he was not told that the record was to be released under the name Johnny Cougar until they showed him the album cover. And he said, what the F? And they said, that's your name now. No one can pronounce Mellencamp. And then he said, no, it's not. I didn't agree to this. And they said, we're not putting out the record. So that's how he ended up with the moniker Johnny Cougar. I had never heard this first record. Have you heard this record, Jeff?
Yeah, I've cherry-picked on it. Are you talking about a biography?
No. Chestnut Street Incident, 1976.
I have heard like tiny bits and pieces, but I've never just sat and checked it out.
So it's mostly covers and not very good. Then in 77, he records The Kid Inside, which
that's
I recommend
right.
you
that's
look
the
at
yellow
the cover
one, right?
for, just so you can see what the picture of him is. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's so rough.
He's got some all-time pictures on these early records for sure. This one, in all his wisdom, Tony DeFries decides not to release and let sit in the can. And Jeff, because he's a super extra classy guy, what does he do in 1983 after American Fool and Aha are huge hits?
He puts that right out as a competing product. It confuses
Don't
the hell
sit
out of
out
everybody.
Under the name John Cougar.
Johnny Cougar.
How you like me now?
Yeah.
Such a dick.
Wait, this is a fascinating album cover, Ben Barton. The what's he got a does he have makeup on?
Sure. It's the kid inside, Tim.
It's the kid inside.
It's the kid inside of him.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
So he gets dumped from the label.
Aww.
He gets picked up by Rod Stewart's manager, who moves him to London for a year. And he just writes songs, plays bands in London, and then records Biography, which is never released in the U.S. It has a large hit in Australia, though, Jeff. Do you know that one?
Is it I Need a Lover?
I Need a Lover is on Biography. It's a number four hit in Australia. Then they put out 1979, the John Cougar album in America. They just slapped that on there. And it's a medium-sized hit in America. Although, do you know the artist who had a bigger hit with it originally?
I can't remember. It's somebody like Eddie Money or somebody like that.
Pat Benatar.
Oh, right. Of course.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that super badass?
I forgot about that. Of course it is.
So then in 1980, he puts out... Now, this is my favorite name for one of his records. Jeff, do you know this one?
I do. I do know this one. Nothing Matters and What If It Did?
So good.
Wow.
So good. And there's one of the reasons that I love Mellencamp is there are so many different quotable lines. And this one I say all the time, except I add the What the Fuck If It Did. Like it just blows off the tongue. So good. Produced by Steve Cropper. Weirdly bad. Like an actual bad record. A step backwards from John Cougar. It's got This Time and Ain't Even Done With the Night are the two singles off this record.
One.
Can you sing either one of them?
Oh, yeah.
And I ain't even done with the night. Yeah.
This
hilarious.
Time. Yeah, I love those songs.
Don't care for those. Didn't like that. Then we get to 1982's American Fool. And now we are in the actual sort of like the heart of the John Cougar Mellencamp experience. And I'm going to go ahead and say now that I think one of the issues that this poor guy has is that he actually has two different personas that are easily lumped into John Cougar and John Mellencamp. And he's got a, like, for an artist that I love this much, and actually I'd be super curious, Jeff, can you think of another artist that you, there's like 25, 30 songs that you really love, and then a whole swath of songs where you're like, these are embarrassing and I can't stand them?
Only artists who have made a ton of records.
Right.
I kind of feel that way about David Bowie, to be honest.
Oh, really? Oh, that's super interesting. I don't have 30 songs. I mean, I don't like Bowie as much as I like Mellencamp, and that means that I'm probably not a great music critic, but that's my take on it. But these records will each have... So, like, American Fool has got Hurts So Good, which is just a classic John Cougar song, and Jack and Diane, which I consider to be the first Mellencamp song. Like, that's the first... Yeah. Like stripped down Americana song that he puts out. And that was the first song of his that I really liked. 1983, Pink Houses in the Mellencamp category. And then some of the, again, just some awful John Cougar songs. Crumbling
like
Down.
Play Guitar. Play Guitar is unforgivable.
Play Guitar. So bad. So
forget
bad.
All about that macho shit and learn how to play guitar, says the macho asshole singer. I hate that song so much.
Now, the good news is by 1985, Scarecrow, we're starting to transition to where Mellencamp is starting to take precedence over Cougar. There still is a horrible John Cougar song on Scarecrow. R-O-C-K in the USA.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Basically just a Bob Seger song.
Yeah.
But Small Town and Rain on the Scarecrow are just two of my all time favorite Mellencamp songs. I love those so much. And here's where he's actually like differentiating himself from Springsteen and from his other near competitors. Like Rain on the Scarecrow and Small Town are so very, very, very specific about life in Indiana. This is the same period of time where he's founding Farm Aid. And in particular, the verse in Scarecrow where the banker who he goes to high school with comes out to take his farm. And he's like,
he calls him John. I love that.
Hey, calling it your job. Sure don't make it right.
Yeah. And then he says, and if you want me to, I'll say a prayer for you tonight. So good. And also like actually expressing like the special pain of that period where factory farming takes over and family farms are just completely driven out of business everywhere, especially in Indiana. I love that one. From 85 through 93, these are all just fantastic banger records. I can't recommend them higher. Scarecrow is great. Lonesome Jubilee will be what other people choose as the best one. And I think as an objective person, you have to say that's his best record. It's not my favorite one, though. It's not my favorite. It does have my favorite Mellencamp song, though. Check it out.
Oh, also, used to be Hot Dogs and Hamburgers, which I adore.
I also really, really love. But Check It Out's got the longer flow to it. And it's also, it's about having a family and growing up and trying to live your life the right way.
What about Cherry Bomb? Is that on that one?
That one's on there too. Yeah, totally.
And my personal sleeper pick is The Real Life, which is also on this record. I love The Real Life, that song.
Okay.
Woo.
All right. So in 1989, he puts out Big Daddy. And at the same time, so earlier in the 80s, he gets married once, he gets divorced, then he marries another woman, and he's getting divorced from her here. And this is a really ugly, sad divorce. Now, I'm going to say how I remember it, and then I'm going to say what the research actually shows. The way I remember it is that he left his wife and disowned his kids. Like, it goes so ugly that he stopped talking to them. And then the research actually shows that he did take a 3-year break from talking to the children of this marriage. And his wife left him because he was cheating on her so badly all the time, relentlessly, in and out of the house with different people. And then Check It Out, he's like talking about the girls that you see on the sly. And apparently that just stayed a major problem for him his whole life. And then he got in a pissing match financially with the mom and the kids and didn't talk to them for 3 years. And the next record is Big Daddy. And the record after that is Whenever We Wanted. And there are some just heartbreaking, heartbreaking songs on those records. And this is my favorite stretch of Mellencamp. So Big Daddy is just a song about this exact thing, like yelling at your kids and just being a monster. And you did it your way, man. You did it all. How does it feel to be the big daddy of them all? So grim. And then 91, Whenever We Wanted, has the song that I'm going to choose. It's not my favorite Mellencamp song, but it's the most searing song, Last Chance. So Jeff, in a second, I'm going to ask you to play from, I think it's 235 is where you want to start to get the really, really, really sad first verse, third verse. The first verse is Cold Day in December, and he's looking out his window, and I just picture it as Christmas Day, all alone, no family, no kids, arguing with all these people. And the last chance to get up, last chance to go. If there was someplace to go, if there was somebody to love, he would do it. But he's just driven everyone away from him.
No pain, I feel no joy, no hurt inside. I only have myself to blame if I see that the world pass me by. Last chance to get up, last chance to go, last chance to get up and go.
So if you compare this song to Pink Houses, it's really instructive. He spent a lot of time learning how to play guitar, and you can hear how much better he is. Like, this part is super, super complex and super likable. And then also just like the sheer utter, it's like the Johnny Cash cover of Hurt, like just the sheer utter despair and desperation and raw feeling in this song. And then it's all over Big Daddy too. Just cuts me and hurts my feelings, but I just absolutely love it. It's like one of my favorite songs about that emotion. If I'm low enough, I'll do the I feel nothing, I feel no pain, no hurt, no joy inside. Like, just that description of where you're at in that time. Oh, stop. Love, love, love that one. And then one more great record from is Human Wheels. And then we're out, 93. And then we've got Dance Naked, which has got Wild Night on it. And then a series of each record after that is more forgettable than the last.
And Mellencamp takes over too much. You know,
I saw him in 93. So I just started in law school. I didn't have any friends, like, because it was the very first week of law school. It was like orientation. And I had classes and everything. I didn't care. I got in my car. I drove it. I can't remember the name of the outdoor venue outside Detroit, but I drove there, bought it, scalped a ticket, went in to go see him. That's how big a fan I was. I was like, I'm not going to miss my chance to see this guy. He's on the Human Wheels tour. The record had just come out, and I was like, I freaking love this album. I can't wait. Went in, and it was just a heartbreaking show. He just played a greatest hit show. He opened with the Authority song and then played all the Cougar hits. And I was like, man, like, it must just be murdering this guy. Like, he's creating this beautiful, deep, rich, super interesting art. And he's just touring on the backs of hits from 10 years ago. Like, it's like the gap between the two different personas really hurt me. And it actually is really funny. I was the rare person who showed up at a show like that and was like, play the new stuff.
Ben and I have cheered that at many a show together. We want the new stuff. We did that at Springsteen in 92 when everybody was like missing the E Street Band. Yeah. These are great take all the way through, Ben. The change from Big Daddy to Whenever We Wanted, the 89 to 91 records, is the rediscovery of the electric guitar. Like, yeah. Big Daddy is a skeletal acoustic record, really. Yep. And I find it impenetrably skeletal. Like, I listen to Big Daddy, I'm like, there's a missing instrument. The arrangements are just too raw. And then the tones of the guitars and the bass and the drums on Whenever We Want It is one of the best recorded rock albums ever, let alone easily the best of his career. Last Chance, a great choice, but Now More Than Ever from that record.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way the guitars play off of each other and the left and right speaker are just great. I think Lonesome Jubilee is my favorite, even though I know that's the one. I love the fiddle playing on that record. I think the lyrics.
Oh, and I should shout her out. That's Lisa Germano.
Lisa Germano.
There's two. The lead guitarist is also great, but the two instrumentalists who really stand out. Kenny Aronoff, the drummer, is like a world-class, top-of-the-line drummer. And you can really hear it in Last Chance. Like, that drum part is super complicated. And then
With the most unique-sounding snare drum in rock and roll. Like, you just know it's Kenny Aronoff when you hear the snare drum. Pop! It's amazing.
Lisa Germano is the female violinist, background singer, multi-instrumentalist. And I could be wrong about this, but I think she's the beginning of that thing. Like, he's the first person, major act, to have like, oh, I got this super cool multi-instrumentalist female who's on stage with me and is like a major player along with it. And on Lonesome Jubilee, you can hear her over and over and over.
She's all over it.
That record. Yeah, all of those violin parts are fantastic.
So the great Kenny Aronoff story is he comes to the American Fool sessions, plays for 2 hours, and the producer's like, you're fired. You can't play to a click. You're a bar band drummer. And we're bringing in a pro. And Aronoff's just like devastated. And he's packing up. And Cougar says, where are you going? He says, I'm going home. I got fired. He's like, yeah, but you want to be my guy, right? And he's like, well, yeah. He's like, so I need you to sit and watch this session and figure out what you can't do that he can. So the next time we do this, you can do it. And Aronoff sits in a chair and watches three months of sessions, watches this guy play, watches him tune his drums, figures out everything he can't do, and when it's his next turn, he's ready for it. But I just love that.
Yeah, that's a great story.
That's a great moment about just like,
well, and dude, I mean, the Mellencamp career
failing
is
up.
It's a super similar thing. I mean, like, it's actually reminded me a lot of Billy Joel or our other friend Bob Seger, where I mean, he put out, you know, five records before he put out a record that was a hit. Like, he really worked the old salt mines before it happened for him.
And boy, is that the perfect segue into my little mini session. That was perfect. Putting out a lot of records before you make it.
Oh, I see.
Any other thoughts, Timmy, on Mellencamp? Are you on board with us? Are you a big fan? Are you a moderate fan?
I've got three thoughts. Number one, I was just such a huge fan in from like 85 to 95. And now I want to go back and re-listen to all those albums. So tomorrow is going to be John Cougar Day. Secondly, the robot lady came to me during a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
That's his daughter.
That's his daughter. I was like, wait, what?
And she's like, that was how supermodel. I confirmed that he stopped speaking to her because she's got an interview where she's like, so she claimed that she grew up without any money. And they were like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
You're John Mellencamp's daughter. And he's like, because he stopped paying child support and stopped talking to me for 3 years. That's how it's possible.
Yeah. So that was interesting. But then that song, Ben, just totally guts me. And this idea, especially now as children grow up, like it's super easy to be a dad, you know, when they're 2, 3, 4, 5, and there you are, and you're the whole world. And now all of a sudden they get to be 20 or 18 or 16. And it's like, when do I intervene or when do I pull back? And like, when I pull back, what am I giving up by pulling back? And like, in that pulling back where you're hoping, right? Like, oh, they'll take it from here. You know, is it possible you're failing at the same time? Like, cause what if you try to intervene and try to be fatherly and they're like, I don't need it right now. I go away. I don't want to talk about it. Oh, those words. I don't want to talk about it. I'm like, no. I have a wealth of knowledge. I have wisdom. I would like to bestow my wisdom upon you. And so it's just kind of heartbreaking to hear how he puts it into words. This kind of this difficult dance we do as fathers and how we father at this point in our children's lives.
That said, the 3 years of no talking is an unforgivable.
Definitely.
Unforgivable.
Definitely.
Like that's just that's revelation of the deep depression and psychosis at the heart of that guy.
Self-indulgent, definitely. Yeah.
That was well said though, Tim.
All right.
It's going to be a hard left turn from that very thoughtful, insightful.
To Ario's feedback.
I am going to talk about a Midwestern phenomenon, which is the Faceless Logo Band. In the mid-70s, we don't have MTV yet, so you don't have to be filmed to be rock star. And the individual artist has always had to have a look, at least a look, right? Most of the time, you had to be good-looking. If you didn't, weren't good-looking, you had to be interesting-looking. But bands, you could hide Sasquatch in the back on bass in a band.
Have you seen Dr. Hook's band? Ooh,
Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show is a great example. Hook has to have something, but the Medicine Show can look like the Muppets, and they do. So coming out of the Midwest in the 1970s, you get a whole series of bands who are known by their logos or their album covers, not them.
True.
And like you could go see one of these bands and you could see them because they were opening for more famous coastal bands. These are the bands that opened for Kiss and opened for Led Zeppelin and opened for like they were the first of three at the big arena shows, but they'd walk on stage and you would know how many of these dudes were going to come out or any of their names or what any of them looked like. And they would tune up and play the first song and be like,
that's
I know
them.
That song.
Yeah. And they'd have their logo behind the drummer.
They're traveling with a sad little banner that gets hung up every night. So the holy trinity of faceless logo bands, of classic Midwestern classic rock, they all kind of come from nowhere. So they could be from anywhere. Topeka, Kansas, Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah.
One of them is from Chicago, but not from the cool Chicago. They all have their breakthrough with a overblown rock song in 1976 to 1977. Then they all have the follow-up ballad mega hit, and then they're all done.
Wait,
by 1983.
Ben, can Ben and I try to guess those songs that you're referencing?
Sure, before I record, absolutely. Also, back to Ben's point, they all record 5 albums before the breakthrough. Years of slogging and obscurity. Just like all of them finally hit it big
after the first set of album contracts is over, and they're all, because they're in the Midwest, and they're, you know, they're in this kind of space where culture usually comes to rather than comes from.
Right.
They're all kind of lost mid-genre. Like, they're friendlier versions of coastal cultural moments. They're not quite prog rock. They're not quite hard rock. They're not quite metal. They're not quite southern rock. So they're this weird little borrowing, like more polite versions of all these things. And so they're woefully uncool with critics because they're unashamedly trying to entertain. Before you guess the bands and guess the songs, there's a silliness to these bands that's classically Midwestern, like just not taking yourself too seriously. Some of the names of the albums of these bands, Left Overture. You get it? Because it's an overture, yeah, but it's a left overture. Yeah. Oh, Point of No Return, spelled K-N-O-W. You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. These are the album names of the records that broke these bands. And the unforgivable ballad that breaks them through. These aren't ballads that have depth. Like Ben was just talking about the emptiness and depth in a Mellencamp songs. These songs are so respectful. There's no edge or no darkness. These are songs about love spelled L-U-V. Like, they represent everything great about the Midwest. These are the deep fried county fair Twinkies
I was going to say, Clint tell us that he saw them at a state fair? Like, that's where they went.
They are the future state fair. They are rock and roll ethanol. They are the pop to punk's soda. So the three bands are what, my friends?
We got REO Speedwagon as one.
REO Speedwagon.
It's got to be Kansas.
Kansas.
And
from Chicago. Styx. Kansas, Styx, REO Speedwagon. The unholy trinity.
Special in this group, too. No.
Oh, they're from the South.
38 Special South.
They're from the South, but I have them lumped right in here.
Okay.
But see, they're a little bit different, though, because it's 38 Special is the Allman Brothers, Marshall Tucker Band. There's a whole Southern rock thing, right?
Yeah, that's a Southern rock.
This is like 38 Special is way too cool for this group. Like, there's a little twang in 38 Special. Like, Caught Up in You has a good guitar solo.
They're not hanging out with Tommy Shaw.
Let me just play you the first 45 seconds of the hard rock song that broke all three of these bands. From 1977.
I'm so excited.
Here we go. And you'll notice something, I think. All right. Let me make sure I've got the volume turned up here so we're all set. And let me take you back to the bicentennial year.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest.
Drums.
Don't you cry no more.
I got to stop them there. I can't believe they have the audacity to take us through that entire thing. The lyrics start in minute two. Here's the next one.
Oregon, you stop before the really unfortunate Oregon solo.
Oh, which, there's so much unfortunate. All right, here we go. Song number two.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the...
Another a cappella, slow build start.
Quiet.
Lawman is putting into my running and I'm so far from...
You know what would make this better? Is if eight guys sang it this time.
Oh, mama, I can hear you crying. You're so scared and all alone.
We're going to need a drum
We're about to get the most grooveless rock groove ever recorded. I cannot believe how absent of soul what happens is next.
Yeah.
in that organ? This is another guy like beating the hell out of a Hammond organ. Now, REO Speedwagon takes some of that Midwestern bombast, but throws a little Billy Joel in it. So it's aged much better, I think, because it's much more. But I think the beginning of this guitar solo is one of the most hilarious, obvious mistakes that's kept. He obviously was trying to bend one note, and he bends like seven by accident. And they're like, ah, just leave it. I cannot hear this guitar intro without thinking it's got to be a mistake.
As soon as you are able, woman, I am willing.
That first line tells you everything you need to know about how dangerous REO Speedwagon is. If you're willing and able, then I am willing. Like, it asks for consent at the beginning of a rock song. I love
good
that about REO
Speedwagon.
Okay, so that opens the door for these bands. They go from playing, like, literally Kansas is discovered by their manager playing in Topeka. Like, I can't believe they escaped Kansas. So what are the three unforgivable ballads that make two of these three bands one of the 100 best-selling bands of all time?
Okay.
So what is Kansas's unforgivable ballad?
Dust in the Wind.
You are absolutely right. I know Tim's going to be money on these.
Oh, God.
How long do you guys think this song is?
5 minutes?
Over or under, man?
I would put over.
It's only 3 minutes and 20 seconds, but it feels like it goes on for a month and a half. I couldn't believe that.
Because I've already...
I already wish it was over.
I've already gone to the
next
radio
got a great call
station.
And response fiddle part coming up. All right, what is Styx's brutal number one ballad?
Is it Babe,
Come
I'm Leaving?
Come Sail Away is by them, right?
Yeah,
Come Sail Away it predates this. This
Babe,
one's much more egregious and much more popular. Oh, Tim, 2 for 2.
Let's go. Oh, yeah.
This is the keyboard sound that makes Ben's sphincter clench up. I mean, this is like Just the Way You Are, but so much worse. And this vocal. God, that took a long time, didn't
wow.
it?
Yes,
we're at minute. We're at 27 seconds.
Babe, I'm leaving.
Oh.
I must be on my way. The time is drawing near.
I mean, it's their desperado.
Hey, this dude. It's yeah, but he's also like he thinks he's in a musical. Like, he thinks he's in the cast of Rent. There's nothing rock and roll about this vocal. It absolutely drives me crazy.
I'll be lonely without you. And I'll need your love to see me through.
Oh. And of course, it gets bigger at the end. But that song was number one for like 11 weeks. It was a huge,
huge
hit. And then what is the REO Speedwagon ballad?
I know this one.
Ben's got
this one.
Keep on loving you.
That's my boy. You remember how huge this song was?
It's huge. Love the song.
By the way, this is just Motley Crue's Home Sweet Home with the guitar, the piano chords in reverse order.
But this is first.
Same exact song.
You should have seen by the look in my eyes, baby. There was something missing. You should have known by the tone of my voice, maybe, but you didn't listen. You played dead, but you never bled. Instead, you laid still in the grass, all coiled up in here, sand. And now I know.
I love they make us wait another full verse and pre-chorus before we finally get Keep On Loving You. That is the longest of those three tracks, unexplainably. So right. Yeah, it's amazing to me that as I look at all three bands, I couldn't believe how many, how many career arcs and overlaps and choices. It's really hilarious to me that they are truly interchangeable with one another. But we have to save a special moment for Mr. Roboto.
In my
research for this, so Styx, after Cornerstone and Babe and Come Sail Away, and they make a kind of a concept album called Paradise Theater, they're the band left behind in an old abandoned theater. And it has a bunch of big hits, stuff. Too Much Time on My Hands, The Best of Times. But it's starting, like, the Styx thing is starting to fade. Like, that guy's Dennis DeYoung's voice, everyone's starting to wake up like, boy, that guy's voice is really a little bit much. But they push the concept thing. They make a sci-fi futuristic concept record called Kilroy Was Here about Japanese robots. And the cover has Japanese robots on it in a way that in 2023
would not go over.
Outrageous. It is something, like, the more you look at it. And the first song is a song called Mr. Roboto, where they sing Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto. And I'm going to play the first verse, and then we have to get to the end, because this song is just, this is a song we could do a whole podcast about, because it is so inexplicable. And it is the jump the shark moment for this band. Like, you cannot know about Styx without this song after hearing this song. Like, Styx is a terrible band their whole career, but they've got there's some forgivable moments,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Not wait. After this. Not after this bizarre thing. It's going to get worse if that's even possible.
You're wondering who I am.
Secret, I got a secret.
Machine or man. Parts made in Japan.
Secret, I've got a secret.
I am the modern man.
Jeff, this is a musical.
This is a musical.
Whip it. Dude. How are they not done this? This is a musical.
I've been hiding under my skin.
You can see the dancers behind him, looking up with, robotic dance moves.
My blood is boiling.
Waiting
my
for
brain God. IBM.
That my brain IBM. Such an unforgivable line.
Strangely,
and it's also kind of got a Dracula horror movie thing going on. It's getting madder and madder, and it's not clear why.
Keep me alive.
All right.
Keep me alive.
So listen to the end, because if you think he's mad there, by the end, everything's gone completely haywire. First of all, who knew there was an octave up there? Here it comes, ready?
My true identity. I'm Kilroy! 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 Kilroy!
What the
hell is going on?
First of all, hopefully the single edit kept that part out, because I've never heard that before.
Dude,
And I've heard the Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto. So good. That's the greatest.
Was that played on radio?
The record gets weirder and weirder from there. It's inexplicably bad. It is there was a huge push. When you went into record stores in 1983, that was the big cardboard, come in here and buy Mr. Roboto. Yeah. So
Theater was a huge hit, and they were they were just going to push this down our throats no matter what. I mean, they played that song on the radio, and I was like, good Lord, what is happening here?
Really?
It's inexplicably horrible. Is it before or after Pink Floyd's The Wall?
It is after Pink Floyd's The Wall.
So are they thinking we're supposed to make an album where teenagers can get high and then just kind of...
But you can't get high to that. I mean, that you can get paranoid to that. I can't imagine.
The robot coming, man. That's
God. And that's not even the worst song on the record. There's a song on the record called Heavy Metal Poisoning, where it's an angry song about heavy metal bands leading people astray that appears to be genuine in the middle of a rock and roll record. So if you have free time, my gentle listeners, Heavy Metal Poisoning from Kilroy is here. Short. Might be the worst song released by a major band in the history of rock music.
Hey, who has the biggest hit latest out of these three bands?
REO Speedwagon.
REO Speedwagon.
What is it?
It's the one. It's the slow song.
Can't fight this feeling anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
a huge hit. Huge
number one.
Hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it that Kansas didn't have any hits in the 80s, Jeff? Did they break up or get hit by a truck?
They had that song, Hold On. But what killed them, I think, was MTV. They made a video for Play the Game Tonight in 1984. But, uh-oh. I mean, that is a band of Chewbaccas. I mean, it is a band of, like, Kansas middle-aged Wookiees. And I think they made the video, and everybody went, oh, my God, that's what Kansas looks like? And it was over. Like, the end. They didn't have anything after that.
Oh, yeah, Hold On is 1980, and then that's it for them, huh?
Yep. Yeah,
we didn't even
play the game tonight, 1982, and that's it.
Oh, man. Yeah,
I think MTV killed Kansas.
That's why we have a podcast. We have no fear of this, right? It's just our melodious voices out there to the listeners.
Jeff, that was fantastic. It
nice
really
job.
Made me happy.
Really
Thank you,
fun.
Brian. Really I fun. Really had fun doing that research, I got to admit.
And now you never have to listen to those bands again. It's done for you.
Oh, no, dude, you are bound to run into those. There's no way avoiding it.
Hey, so I originally was very excited for this idea, Ben. So I was like, oh, great. We haven't talked about Woody Guthrie. And I talk about him a lot in my American Studies class. So I'll put Woody Guthrie. And then I found out on Friday that Oklahoma is not part of the Midwest. It's like, what? So that's crap. And then I went through and made a list of basically the five biggest musical acts that each state claims, which is important because what you have to understand is that states sometimes claim people who would not claim to be from that state. So I was like, oh, Elliott Smith, Nebraska, I'm in. And it turns out he left Nebraska as a baby, was raised in Texas. But Jeff, you associate Elliott Smith with?
Portland, Oregon. Rock Stars, Heat Miser. That's really where he came to prominence.
So then I was stuck. But in the last 36 hours, I've been listening to more Connor Oberst content than I knew was available in the listening world.
I like this. That's a good take, Timmy.
I cannot believe this guy. And he's born in 1980. Do you know at what age he made his first album?
1992.
He was 13 years old on his dad's, a four-track cassette recorder. He made an album that his brother put out. And his brother was a teenager himself, and they just called it Lumberjack Records. And that's how they started not only the music career, but also the recording career that both of them have enjoyed ever since. Give me a wild guess on how many different bands Connor Oberst has been a part of.
Are you counting like the ballads? I mean, the duets? Or are you like, it has to have a separate name?
Has a separate name.
We'll put the over under at 7.5.
Oh, that's good. I was going to say
really
7.
That's really good. That's really
I'm
good.
I'm going to take the under.
It's under. I think it's 6. And then he also has his solo career and solo albums.
Right.
But Connor Oberst put out under his own name an album in 93, 94, 96. 2008, 2009, 2014, 2016, 2017. There's a big gap there. That's because he started the band Bright Eyes, where he went 2 albums in 98, 2000, 2 albums in 2002, 2 albums in 2005, 2007, 2011, 2020. And that doesn't include his kind of grunge metal band, Desaparecidos. Have you heard them? They're really great. Here's my problem with Connor Oberst I associate him with this song from Bright Eyes. Jeff Simons, that very first song I sent you. This is called First Day of My Life.
First day of my life, swear I was born right in the doorway. I went out in the rain, suddenly everything changed. They're spreading blankets on the beach. Yours is the first face that I saw. I think I was blind before I met you.
So I hear that song, what's that, 2003, I think, and I'm like, got it. Sad guy, navel gazing, plucking along, I'm out. Like that. I mean, that was it, because that wasn't where I was in 2003. I wonder how I would have felt about Bright Eyes if I were a sophomore in college or a junior in college, you know, or like a sad 25-year-old wearing black. Like, would it have affected me differently? And I think I never gave Bright Eyes a chance after that. But in the last 36 hours, check out how different this song is. This is from Connor Oberst's solo album. It's called Napalm. I think it's the album Oblivion. That's much more clever than I thought. This is a kid who grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, went to high school in Omaha, Nebraska, matriculated to the University of Nebraska, dropped out after, I think, a semester or two to pursue his music career. And he's basically been writing music since the age of 13, just cranking out album after album. But what I like most about him is his willingness to be part of other groups like Monsters of Folk, and to try out different genres, that is not just a sad navel gazing guy. And his latest project with Phoebe Bridgers, called the Better Oblivion Community Center, gives us an absolute gem of a song called Dylan Thomas. Jeff Simons. Guy, I'm kind of dumbstruck by how much music he has put out in the last 25 years. And it's like, oh my gosh, okay, tomorrow's my John Cougar Mellencamp day where it's all John Cougar all day. But as soon as Wednesday rolls around, I'm going to go back to Connor Oberst and really dig in, because I think this guy is something special.
I am a medium fan, and my issue with him is that he's put out too much music. He has got, there's like 10, 15 Conor Oberst songs that I like. And then there's a hardcore 5 songs that are like on my greatest, you know, my 1500 favorite songs list. And I can't hear enough. One that I passed along to the girls is, I think it's off the record. It's Wide Awake. It's Morning. But it's the song called Lua, L-U-A.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's
a great song. Duet that was on that's on a charity album with Jillian Welch of Lua.
Yeah.
And it's got Dave Rawlings doing the guitar part, and they swap verses with each other. And it's a song about being a heroin addict in New York. And, yikes. Oh, man, is it a beautiful, beautiful, heartbreaking song. So good. That's my favorite ballad by him. And dude, on the up-tempo one that you played, a song that you should definitely check out if you haven't heard it already, is Another Traveling Song. Have you heard that one, Timmy?
I haven't, no. Another
that
Traveling Song?
Super up-tempo. And this is no shade to him at all. It's an up-tempo Dylan 67 song. But
yeah, yeah.
I mean that as praise. I don't mean that as
Yeah, he's criticism. Leaning in hard to that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, totally. So I dig that. But yeah, no, he's an act, like, in comparison to Ryan Adams, who has been a monster with his younger female colleagues. You know, he's a legit hero to these people and has played with all of them and done a really classy job of it. That Better Oblivion record is great.
Yeah.
There's several good songs on that record.
Yeah, yeah, like, man. And I, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'm just really impressed with his collaborations, you know, M Ward. And it's like, a lot of them I don't like or I've bypassed, but I'm wondering if that's just my own 50-year-old white guy thing. And it's like,
no, I mean, it's a scattershot. Like, the guy's dipping his toe in all these different pools. And like, one of the things that's amazing about a guy that prolific is there might be whole records where you're like, that's not my thing, but it was his thing at that moment. And then, I'm not as big a fan of this band, but I have no reason not to be, to be honest. Like, every time I hear Conor Oberst, I'm like, that's pretty good. So you inspired me. I'm going to do a little deep dive in myself.
Have either of you listened to the Desaparecidos records?
No.
I have not.
You really should. You really should. Like, they're the left is right. I mean, it's very political, and it's punk, and it's kind of neat. And it's like, Oh, that's the same guy who did, like, this is the first day of my life. You know, it's like, it's kind of shocking that it's the same guy, but it's really fun.
But the entire area around the I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. So this is 2005. He had Rawlings playing the guitar for him on definitely on that record, and maybe on the record before and after. And they're fantastic. And then I saw Bright Eyes at Bonnaroo with Dave Rawlings and Jillian Welch, and they all played together in a round robin. And it was a show that just blew the doors off. So that era is particularly likable.
And he's still got a home in Omaha. And I went to Omaha in December and had a lovely time. I ate steak. Lots of steak in Omaha.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
So if you're hungry, I think he also opened a bar. So it's like for music, and you get to go there. It used to be a bookshop, and he's like, no, I want a music venue in Omaha for independent musicians. Yeah, really great stuff. All right.
That was also really great stuff, Timmy. Great call, buddy.
Nice job. Nice job. Lovely time here in the Midwest. I am going to throw something out there. You can reject it if you want. But let's take a vacation from America and let's go to Manchester, England next time.
Done and done.
Fish and chips. Manchester,
you wanna
England.
I work with a lovely Mancunian who's a music fanatic. If you want to have a guest.
Just really?
Let me know. Yeah.
From Manchester.
Yeah, he's got an accent and everything. He'll be really authentic.
All right, we'll talk offline about that. Could be the artist in residence makes a comeback. Who knew? We thought we had buried that. All right, great seeing you guys. Have a great week.
You too, friends.
Thank you, listeners.
Well done.
Bye.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast. Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Bathlaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Cast. Electric Cast.